This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. Well, once more, we'll trawl across the Sky Bet Championship, League One and League Two to bring you the biggest names, the best stories and everything else that goes on beneath the surface of the world's oldest league competition. This week, as the country finds itself at the dawn of a new era. One in which Preston North End finally conceded a goal. Only the third team in English football history not to let one in until their eighth game of the season. Meanwhile, it's business as usual for this man and his team in the Sky Bet Championship.
We all want to stay in the Premier League. We all want to be there. And the club has obviously come out the last couple of weeks that we want to have a few years in a row. And then you really can grow as a club.
And it's been a time of emotional reunion for this man.
We saw Adam at his fittest, at his best, which was a privilege to see. He was such a good teammate. A good bloke, first and foremost, but an incredible asset to have in any team.
It's the official EFL podcast. In stark contrast to last season when they won five games across their whole Premier League campaign, Norwich City have won their last five in a row and they are right where they were predicted to be before a ball was kicked, occupying one of the Sky Bet Championship's automatic promotion places. In the previous 10 seasons, they have been promoted or relegated seven times and Tim Krul has been involved in the last four of them. And there is a reason for me setting that up, Tim, because I want to know how you manage your own contrasts in emotions. You are machine-like in the Championship, used to winning, and then you hit the wall when you get into the Premier League. How does a human being juggle that?
Yeah, it's hard because you've got such a high from winning, obviously, the league and the Championship. The whole city is behind you. And then you head to Premier League where when things goes against you, you're obviously not winning every week and unfortunately, we haven't been able to deal with it well. We obviously had a young squad initially, inexperienced in the first time we were promoted. And the second time round, again, there's a lot of excuses, but at the end of the day, we weren't good enough. I think the biggest reason, like I mentioned, is when you go on a 4 or 5 game not winning, then still to go out and play with confidence, it's normal the confidence gets knocked. And I think that's been the biggest one where you go to Man City away, then Liverpool, then Chelsea at home, to then still play and have the confidence to get on the ball or constantly. The level has just been too good for us. But again, we are now a few years further ahead. A lot more players have been playing in the Premier League, a lot more experience. So we know what the club is about with the foundations that have been late. It's amazing facilities and now we can really kick it into gear with the playing stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the word foundations. Do the club's hierarchy kind of share with you that it's not going to be throwing the baby out with the bathwater, something like Forest have done, where all the players that effectively have taken them up, two or three of them are going to start in the Premier League? There's a stability about the way Norwich do things. But is that kind of chucked out there at the start of a Premier League season?
Well, to be fair, you have to be honest where the club was 6 years ago. You know, it was nearly bankrupt. You know, and I think that's to go where we are now. And if you see the facilities, the players we've got now, all young, exciting talent who will create amazing plays. Like, it's amazing place for players to come now. And we all want to stay in the Premier League. We all want to be there. And the club has obviously come out the last couple of weeks that we want to have a few years in a row. And then you really can grow as a club. And again, like I said, it hasn't been our luck so far. But if you look at teams like Fulham now, who done a similar path as Norwich, they're more equipped this year, it seems like, to stay in this league. So you need everything going for you. And I think there's been too much going against us in the last couple of years.
Does the culture feel exactly the same as when you had the first of your two championships? Titles. Does it feel very much like the same club, albeit with changes in resources, potential young players coming through?
The good thing is we know what it takes to win this league. So we know it's a marathon. We don't get too stressed about the start. Listen, we all want to win games and we're buzzing that we've got a 5-game winning streak, but we also know that you could have a bad week and you lose 2 or 3. So the good thing is we've got such a talent in this squad, and not just the first 11, I think the big thing, what we've seen already, is the people coming off the bench. I think we've got 6-7 starters, potential starters on the bench every week, and even not even on the bench sometimes, you know. And I think that's the strength we've got this year, is what the club has done really well. We've equipped well because we know with the schedule and a month less, we still have to play 46 games and then the World Cup in the middle.
Yeah, which in itself is making it a very interesting season. How would you compare the two managers?
Very different. Obviously, European, German mentality is literally all about hard work and strong and a lot of gym, a lot of hours on the pitch. And I think our gaffer now is it's all about technically, tactically being ready for the next challenge. And I really enjoy the two different ways, because we've got so much talent here. You have seen in the last few weeks that it's coming to flourish a little bit now. And yeah, really excited for the path ahead, because I still believe this club got so much potential to kick on.
I wondered where it sits with you, Tim, because certainly in terms of the amount of games, I think you are about to surpass the number that you played for Newcastle United, which I always think of you because I'm from the Northeast and you broke through there as, you know, all the years you spent there. But I wonder where it now sits in terms of your career, your time at Norwich City. I mean, it's been an incredible 4 years.
Yeah, it's been, I didn't expect it to go like this, I'll tell you that. It's definitely surpassed my expectations, and I'm really proud to be part of that journey already. And like I mentioned, I still feel there's so much growth in the club, in the squad. I mean, you can't really compare the two, because obviously I went to Newcastle as a 17-year-old boy and I was contracted to them for 12 years, and it's been, that shaped me who the person I am today. And I'm just buzzing to be playing every week for a club like Norwich, who, again, yeah, it's a lot of games, but the Championship is an exciting league, let me put it that way.
Yeah, it's an evocative area, isn't it? The whole area that you're now living in. And I mean, I had a weekend off a couple of weeks ago and went up to the whole North Norfolk coast, which somehow, despite my wrinkles and lack of hair, had passed. I mean, it gets under your skin, that area. And there's a lot of guys play for Norwich and subsequently stay in the area afterwards.
Yes, I've been quite lucky to have obviously been at Newcastle, and I still got my house up north, and I will always keep that because my missus is from up north. So we'll always keep that connection there. But again, yeah, we've been lucky to found another home in Norwich and in Norfolk, because especially for the family, it's a great place.
You know, I love a chat about goalkeeping, and I wondered how, you know, when you first went to Newcastle, obviously you were trying to break through and try and unseat the mighty Shea Given and Steve Harper. Now you've got a youngster with huge ties to the club nibbling at your toes. How do you take that as a positive and not get freaked out by it and think, oh, somebody's coming up behind me, but actually take it as a positive to get better and better, to keep them at bay?
I've always played better with competition behind me, you know, and I think it's the level you train at every day. Also Mickey McGoffin, who was part of the goalkeeping union here, and with the quality we're showing every day, gets me ready for the weekend. And you're right. When I was 18, 19, I wanted to kick Shea Given out of the team and Steve Harper. I was telling the gaffer that I was ready to surpass them all. And I'm the guy now who's getting hunted. So, yeah, lucky enough, I've got the experience to deal with that. Obviously, Ralph Farman a couple of years ago came in, big German, played Champions League. And that was a big challenge to keep him out. And yeah, now we've got obviously Angus Gunn and Mickey. We're all fighting for the number one spot. And I think the good thing is it obviously helps when you're winning. So then the gaffer's is more happy with the team who's playing. That's, let me put it that way. But yeah, it keeps me on my toes, and I think that's the best way.
Yeah, it's such a lovely blend, isn't it? Because I guess usually you're mates, are you, with rival goalkeepers within the squad?
Most of them.
Most. Oh, okay. I won't push you on that, mate. I won't push you on that.
No, at this club, definitely, I'm lucky. I'm lucky. But yeah, there's sometimes also, if you go to the national team or whatever, you got, you know, you're not always mates, but you have to work with each other. But yeah, I've had goalkeepers who on purposely put the ball in the top corner or give you a bad service. Or, oh yes, it definitely goes on these kind of games.
Yeah, because obviously the fortunes of, say, the number two do directly relate to the misfortunes of the number one, which is why it's such an intriguing proposition to be able to watch a training session, as I've been lucky enough to do at lots of clubs. And I've chatted to you and Mickey certainly before about this situation. It's just one of those intriguing love-hate relationships, isn't it?
Yeah, and I've been number two as well, you know, behind goalkeepers. I was at Brighton and I was the same, you know. It's a weird feeling because you sit on the bench and you don't really want your number one goalkeeper to do so well, you know, but you want your team to win. So it's a really difficult place to be. So I always hoped it was going to be 5-4 every week, and then with four mistakes off the number one. So I get it.
I love it. Tell me something. How old are you now, Tim, please, if you don't mind me asking?
34.
You know, obviously goalkeepers can play a lot longer than the outfield positions, but I wondered how age does affect a goalkeeper. Do you have to look for slightly better techniques of landing, or do you have to work extra hard at your stretching and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think, to be fair, the support now compared to 10 years ago is incredible. I mean, after the interview, I've got a Pilates session. I've got obviously all the injury prevention in the gym. You've got coaches for everything nowadays. Nutrition is obviously really important. So yeah, touch wood, I've been quite lucky with the support here who keeps me going. And I feel better than I've ever felt, to be honest. I think more the fact that I'm probably more professional now than I was when I was 21. So yeah, I've still got a few years in me.
I guess it just, I'm not quite sure whether you're going to get a little rest from mid-November for a few weeks or whether you might be a little bit busy there. So
yes, yeah, who knows?
Who knows? Who knows indeed? The Sky Bet Championship fixtures this coming when? Well, Tim's Norwich are in the big game of the weekend. It's your Friday night fixture. They are away at Burnley elsewhere. Fourth place, Bristol City entertain Preston. Coventry, still the only team looking for a win, but they do have games in hand, are home to West Brom. Huddersfield, who have received an apology from Hawkeye after their goal against Blackpool was chalked off when the buzzers failed to go off. They visit QPR. Rampant Sheffield United, particularly at home, they entertain Rotherham, and Watford against Reading is sixth against third. There's a full round of midweek fixtures as well, including quite a few derby matches. Preston Burnley on Tuesday night, Millwall, QPR on Wednesday night, West Brom, Birmingham also Wednesday night when Tim's Norwich entertained Bristol City. How much, Tim, does past experience of the battle you're now in come to bear and count?
I think it's massive. I think just the composure of, we know that 2 points average will win you this league per game, and that's where we're on now, and that's the line we just, you know, we need to keep following, and hopefully we can do it again. Our aim is to be in that top two this season again. We know we've got a squad what it's capable, and we just have to not be complacent, because we know that we're going to face some tough tests the next few weeks, and it's just exciting. It's a great league to be in. I mean, 2 years ago we were in full lockdown, so we didn't really get the joy from the fans behind us, and I mean, there's nothing better than on a Saturday afternoon winning and getting that support. And I think the whole city is starting to really back us again, and hopefully we have the same result.
Yeah. You did experience the temporary joy when you drove the stewards crazy, didn't you? Didn't all the fans gather outside Carrow Road and you guys took the mountain to Mohammed, did you not? You went outside and celebrated with them even though they couldn't be inside.
Yes, you know a lot, mate. Yeah, you've got the... I think you were there as well, but it was a big shame, obviously, because like we knew how much support we've got every week here now, and I was lucky enough to be there 4 years ago when we won it, and we had to bus through the city, and it's a shame because some of the young lads haven't experienced that yet, but so we'll have to do it again hopefully this year, and we can celebrate extra.
You know, as you do get older, do you relax a bit more about vociferously watching loads of football, particularly your rivals, or are you still quite pedantic about studying the form? A lot of the names that I read out there, oh, they've won, oh, they dropped points, who've they got this weekend? Which are you now?
I tend not even to look at the table. There's no point looking at the table now. I always say, well, you played everybody once, 23 games in, that's when you kind of get a good feeling where teams are. Like, some people obviously have a good start and they drop off for a couple of weeks. And you know how this league works. You have two good weeks and you're past 10, 12 teams.
Yeah. Well, 100%. There's no point in me ever inviting you on this podcast as a pundit then on that basis, is there?
No. At the moment, I try to... To be fair, I watched obviously West Brom Burnley the other day. That was a really entertaining game to watch. And I was really impressed with both of them, to be honest. And I was obviously interested to see how company was setting up his team. And I do my homework. Don't get mistaken by that. But yeah, I think we'll get some great tests. Burnley versus City and West Brom. This week is a big week for us, and hopefully we can keep this run going.
Yeah, Watford coming up as well within the next calendar month too. Finally, this won't make a lot of sense to obviously our podcast listeners, but just show me those giant hands of yours again, please. Come on, mate, just for me. Those are big hands. You wouldn't want to get in the way of those giant mitts. Tim, it has been a pleasure as it always is. Good luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you. Good afternoon, mate.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Tate.
Not a dry eye in the house at St James's Park, Exeter, last weekend as Exeter City beat MK Dons and 19-year-old Jay Stansfield came off the bench to make his debut for the club wearing the number 9 shirt previously worn by his dad, Adam, before his untimely death at the age of just 31 back in 2010. Manager Matt Taylor played for Exeter alongside Adam and was manager when Jay left the club to join Fulham back in 2019 before last week's subsequent loan back. It must have been very hard, Matt, not to be affected by that whole experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredible experience which goes back, you know, best part of 12 years now. You cast your mind back to when myself and some of the staff played alongside Adam in that team, which had success through the National League, the conference at the time, and then all the way through to League One, and then his unfortunate illness, and then obviously the tragic end to it in terms of his passing. And Jay was such a young boy at the time. And then to see him develop through our academy system and to get his move to, which was then a Premier League club in Fulham, was incredible to be around at the time of. And we've followed his career at Fulham for the last three seasons with the understanding and the knowledge that if the opportunity ever came around to us where we'd bring Jay back to the football club, it's certainly something we'd spoke about and thought was the right thing to do, not only for ourselves, but for Jay as well. He's only ever going to play for Exeter City either at the very start of his career in men's football or right at the very end. So we thought it was the right thing to do to give him the opportunity at the start of this season. I actually spoke to him best part of 60 to 70 days ago in the middle of June. I didn't have to sell the football club to him. I didn't have to speak about footballing aspects to him. I just spoke about the feel for himself and his family and what it would mean for him to come back to the football club. Little did we know that he'd go on to make his Premier League debut at the start of this season and to start a Premier League game as well and to feature heavily in Fulham's start to the season. And that was great to see. But whilst that was great to see, I had my manager's hat on as well. I knew that might mean we might miss out on the loan move, which was already in the pipeline. But luckily, Fulham signed a couple of players really late on Thursday evening and we were finally able to bring Jay to the football club.
At what point on transfer deadline day did you realise that finally, after that 60, 70 days of work, this looked like it was going to be a go? Are we literally talking that you got the go-ahead, what, Thursday morning, Thursday lunchtime, Thursday mid-afternoon? When did you get the call?
We were working with the understanding that Fulham were talking to players. Medicals were due to be completed Thursday afternoon. Scan results were waiting to come back Thursday evening. There was paperwork to be completed. And only once that paperwork was completed around 9 o'clock Thursday night could we actually get Jay to start his paperwork. So it went right down to the wire. But I've got to be honest, Fulham were outstanding from start to finish. And since Jay's obviously arrival on the scene in the Premier League, there's been other interest other than ourselves. But Jay felt it was the right thing to do to come back to ourselves as a football club. And Fulham, you know, appreciated that and understood it as well, because he could have obtained a championship move late on in the window. So we knew Fulham wanted to bring in more attacking players and have more attacking options. And with no disrespect to Jay, probably more experience in those positions. Jay's still wet behind the ears. He's not played much senior football to date. So his opportunity with ourselves is obviously a footballing one, but the sentimental aspect of it and the value which he's brought to everyone associated with a football club, but more so Jay and his family, can't be underestimated.
It's not one that's in the managerial handbook though, Matt, is it? I mean, how you handle this situation, even down to, I guess, the available shirt number. I mean, Did you debate this behind the scenes? Shall we give him it? Shan't we? Is it too much of a burden? Is it going to disaffect him a bit? I mean, how did you deal with all this? Did you and did his dad come up in the conversations with Jay about coming back? Go on, take us through the sort of plot of that.
We're very open in terms of our discussions from start to finish. And Jay knew the number 9 shirt had been retired. He knew it was available. That was his decision. We didn't force it on him. We said it's the opportunity for you to wear the number 9 shirt. And for such a young man, he's got an incredible level head on his shoulders, probably because he's been through so much. And his words were that if he was going to do this move properly and do it right, it was fitting that he would wear the number 9 shirt with Stansfield on his back. And, you know, there's no added pressure on Jay. There's no added expectation. There's just the love and support we have for him and his family on the back of what they went through all those years ago and probably what they've continued to go through. This weekend was emotional for everyone, but even more so for Jay and his family. And as much as we try and put it into words for ourselves, almost selfishly, we can't put into words what they would have been feeling. So we'll continue to support him. That was his debut, his first time on the pitch. His first goal will be even worse, I think. His first start, the first time that big bank starts singing his name, anniversaries and everything we've got to come throughout the season. But it's a season-long loan, and his footballing contribution, I expect, will be outstanding for the football club.
I know that the listeners to the Official EFL podcast are very well educated when it comes to their football and all their stories. But just for the benefit of those that don't know, I mean, obviously there was the 37 goals from Adam in the 4 years that he played for the club, but also a real groundswell of feeling for him since, Matt. There's a foundation set up in his honour. There's lots of stuff been happening in his memory. After, let's be honest as well, it must have been, I'm guessing, the worst moment of your football career. His deterioration at the end was stark, wasn't it? Back for pre-season training and, you know, was gone within a couple of months.
It was horrendous, but as difficult as it was for myself and my teammates and the management staff at the time, it would have been a lot worse for the families involved. So we saw Adam at his fittest, at his best, which was a privilege to see. He was such a good teammate, a good bloke first and foremost, but an incredible asset to have in any team. The most willing runner I've ever played with or witnessed in any game of football. And that's why the fans loved him so much. He'd be the first to acknowledge he wasn't the most skillful player in the world, but he managed to have an eye for the goal. And his heart was bigger than anything I've ever seen before. So to share a football pitch and to share a change room was incredible. And then to see, like you say, his deterioration from, you know, the first times we found out about the illness, you know, we expected it to be a stomach strain, a hernia. He had a bit of pain in that region. And obviously the test came back with the worst possible news. And then the following year off the back of that was just to see him get weaker and weaker and almost to become a different body to what he had previously, because he had an athlete's body 12 months earlier to become what he did. But that was the illness taking its toll. And we managed to see him a few times in the last few weeks at the hospital, but we didn't see him at his very worst. So, like I say, no matter what we went through at the time, his family would have went through an awful lot more than what we did. And then we got to celebrate his life in the right fashion with his ex-teammates, with people from the clubs all over the place where he played, his family members, his friends, and the Exeter City faithful as well. And he's got a stand named after him. We retired the number 9 shirt. So much has been done in his memory. There's a charity now, the Adam Stansfield Foundation. There's so much work for children in around us, the southwest area, to provide them with the opportunities which Adam ultimately ended up getting. And it's all come through football, and football often gets a lot of bad press. It really does. But then there's sometimes a story like this, and there's examples out there of a bit of a silver lining to the game. And we feel it was the right thing to do to try and bring Jay back to the football club. And we didn't do it for the story. We did it because our fans would appreciate it. We're owned by the fans. We have to understand what they would want. We're also forgetting the fact that he's probably the best young under-21 player in the country. He's had under-20 England experience. He's played in the Premier League. So the playing perspective was huge. But the feel for the football club just gave us an extra boost on the back of the momentum we got from the promotion last year.
Adam Stansfield, never to be forgotten, goes without saying. We wish Jay well for the rest of the season with you. I mean, I'm looking at the League One table now. I'm going to be honest with you. A couple of times this season, I've gone looking for you in League Two, because obviously you were there for 10 years. Have you done it yourself at any point? Actually gone and looked in the wrong table, Matt?
Of course you do. Every time you log on to the BBC Sport app, it's just habit. look at the League Two news before you look at any other league table or league news per se. So that's an old habit which will take a bit of time to come out. But there's nothing better than looking at the League One table at the moment and the fixture list and the games we got to look forward to, but also the experience we've had so far. The team have shown they can compete at the level. They've shown they can provide what we need in terms of points and also entertainment. The three wins we've had, Port Vale, Wickham, MK, fantastic games of football to witness, showed good composure with points on the road. Lincoln first game of the season and Accrington. And then even more, a little bit of disappointment when we've been beaten at Cambridge and at home to Cheltenham. So we're looking forward to what's to come. And we're going to, you know, under no illusions how difficult it would be. We got Charlton this weekend, a monstrous club at the level. But this group of players deserve to have the opportunity to play at this stage. And I was conscious we only needed a few bodies in relation to recruitment. So the nucleus of last season's squad is very much still there.
Yeah. I mean, it rather begs the question just how far a fan-owned club can go, what the expectations are, and do the principles burn throughout the entire fabric of the football club? There is not one individual there who does not know that there is a finite amount of resources and what you do get is generated out of what you have got.
Yeah, well, everyone understands it. We speak to players before they come to the club. The academy players know it. The staff, it's ingrained in them. No better example than the business we did on deadline day. Almost went under the radar on Jay's return to the football club. Is the fact we sold Alfie Pond, another 19-year-old centre-half who's come through the academy. Fantastic financial reward for the football club. And that will keep us in the right colour in the bank accounts for the next sort of 6 to 12 months, as long as we can keep on getting the fans in the door and get them in the stadium. So we all understand what we are as a football club. There's always going to be a ceiling. Our bandwidth is unfortunately not as big as some of those clubs, those financially well-backed clubs at the level. But with the team spirit we've got and with the spirit and feeling we've got around the football club at the moment, I'm sure we'll keep surprising a few people.
What's that gap like? Everybody talks about Premier League down to Championship, huge gap. A lot of people talk about going from League One up to the Championship, huge gap. What are the differences, the fundamental differences between the bottom two tiers?
I just think there's no, you know, no disrespect to any footballers out there listening in, but there's no slower players. There's no players not at their physical peak in League One. Everyone's able to handle the ball comfortably, and the stadiums, the pitches, the whole feel about the games we've encountered so far has had a slightly extra professional feel. And it's been a quicker game. The ball's in play for longer. So all of a sudden, our S&C coach and our GPS data is different to what it was in League Two and previous seasons, because our players are having to cover more distance. So there's a physical aspect which has to be covered. And then you add the quality and the control which players have on top of that. It's a league to enjoy and a league to admire as well. I mean, so many of our League One clubs and League One opponents have played in the Premier League probably in the last decade, if not the last 20 years. Now, that might be a little bit far off for ourselves at Exeter City, but we can still dream of being a big club and getting the best out of what we've got and possibly one day reaching the Championship.
As you start to visit the juggernaut clubs like Charlton, the big clubs, will you have to manage that side of things and just kind of condition the boys that they are going to be going to cacophonous stadiums with giant big crowds? And that is in no way disrespectful to St James's, because obviously there's a fair old din can come out of that place when it's in full throb.
Another level of occasion and another level of spectacle. We go to Charlton this weekend, which is probably a 30-plus thousand seater stadium. There might be 16 to 18,000 people there. And when they make a noise, it's awfully loud. But this group of players have got no fear at the moment. They've not been scolded as yet by the results we've had in League One. And even when we do get beaten, and we will get beaten heavily at times, we'll keep them as level as we possibly can and always look at what's next. And even in defeats, we'll find some sort of enjoyment and some sort of satisfaction, because there's a lot of other places we could be going to. And that's no disrespect to the clubs in League Two or National League level. We've done that for long enough. And this club and our fans especially are going to enjoy. I think there's a 1,500 people from Exeter going to Charlton this weekend. And they'll sing no matter what. We might be getting beat 3 or 4-0. And they'll keep on singing and supporting this group of players, because we are trying to do it a different way. So far this season, we've had between 6 and 8 academy products on the pitch in the starting lineup.
Brilliant.
we're trying to show everyone else in the football world that there is a different way to just pumping money in and recruiting players. And as we're doing that, we're starting to show a little different side to ourselves. And that's some of our players really coming into their own in terms of the quality they hold.
Your Sky Bet League One fixtures this coming weekend, then Portsmouth still unbeaten in second. They travel to Barnsley. Burton, Dino Marmory has succeeded Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank as manager this week. Still looking for their first win. They're at home to Fleetwood. More on them in a minute. Matt's Exeter visit Charlton, as he's just said. Still unbeaten, the leaders Ipswich are at home to Cambridge. Morecambe winless, and whose owners have announced they're up for sale. They entertain Derby County. Sixth place Peterborough at home to Forest Green Rovers, and it's third against fourth as Plymouth entertain Sheffield Wednesday. I wanted to ask you about Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank's departure, and in particular his assistant Dino Marmria taking over. Statement from the club said he would step up from his role as assistant to prepare for the game against Fleetwood. But Dino himself has said, if we want to do this properly, we have to do it properly straight away. He's been to see his chairman and made the point that being a caretaker really isn't helping anybody. He wanted to know where he stood. He wanted to speak to his players and tell them it wasn't a short-term fix. And he says it is now a long-term fix. He is the full-time manager of Burton Albion. Just to remind people, Jimmy left the club saying he'd taken them as far as he could within the limits of the resources available. Can you understand where Dino is coming from, that it's difficult to do the things the man in charge needs to do and then potentially step back down if they bring a manager in afterwards?
Yeah, clarity is a big word, a buzzword in football. He would have needed clarity. The players, first and foremost, they're the ones who need the most amount of clarity. They need organisation and structure. They need belief. And they need a plan as well. Half-time team talks, pre-game team talks, daily discussions with players are about a focus. And if the focus is elsewhere in terms of uncertainty in relation certainly to the manager's post, that's very difficult for players to concentrate on the job at hand. So Dino, obviously being the character that he is.
You can say that again.
Quite brash and open at you. I'm sure he'll have gone into the chairman's office and said, you know, asked where he stood. And the subsequent news would appear to be that he's got the job on a full-time basis. And then he can start his organisation, his planning, his structure, put his stamp on that team. He's been part of the group which have struggled so far this season, but had relative success in previous seasons alongside Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. So it'll be interesting to see how that story develops, I suppose. Look, we're in a slightly different situation at Exeter where, you know, we're not even able to compete with the likes of Burton, and Burton are obviously struggling financially within the league. So it tells you how difficult the level is and how ruthless the level is and how confidence can affect results. One thing for any football team, if you have a poor start to any season, it's so difficult to get going, and sometimes a change is needed. Now the chairman's made that change, or the previous manager's made that change, and now it's down to Dino to get some life and some points into that group of players.
It is funny, isn't it, how you can just hit the wall. And obviously I would say that what Jimmy achieved when he went into Burton, not last season, the season before, they'd had an awful start. It was miraculous that he saved them and actually took them towards mid-table safety. Just things sometimes happen in football, Matt, that they surprise everybody involved. It just is your turn to be on the ropes, and no matter what you do, you almost can't fathom it. It just doesn't work for you.
It doesn't, you know. Everyone's got a short memory in football, and people forget what the job Jimmy did there in the previous seasons. He probably didn't get his recruitment where he needed to get it or where he wanted to. That's always a reflection on where the club is financially within the market. It's reliant on the opposition who you're competing against. We don't always get the targets we need, but every club needs a substantial amount of players to bring freshness and life and quality to any group. If a club doesn't have that, it sometimes stagnates. Now, I've been in a fortunate position at Exeter City Manager, because not only in terms of recruitment have we generally done quite well in the market, but there's always young players coming through, and those young players keep on adding life and energy, which is a phrase I keep using, which is so, so important to any squad and players. And then there's almost a cycle of players to come through, and you see them develop and grow and get their opportunity. Now, at a club like Burton, the strength of the academy doesn't quite seem to be there. So then you are just only competing against other teams at the level to recruit players in. Financially, if you can't do that, then all of a sudden you won't have the players you need. If you've not got the players you need as a manager, your job becomes a lot harder than it was originally.
your Sky Bet League 2 fixtures this coming weekend. Unbeaten leaders Leighton Orient, 5 points clear of fourth already. They go to Wimbledon. Third place Barrow home to Colchester. Crawley, one of the three teams without a win, entertain Gillingham. Hartlepool also without a win. They entertain sixth place Doncaster. Mansfield against Bradford City is seventh against eighth, and Clough against Hughes. Another one of the winless teams, Rochdale, entertain fourth place Salford. Second place Stevenage are at home to Sutton United, and Northampton Town in fifth travel to Walsall. Are you glad to be out of that division? On with another challenge.
Yeah, it's incredible to see. We got out at the right time because that league's got stronger on the back of Stockport and Grimsby coming into the club and the four relegated teams from League One. I can guarantee it'll get stronger again in the next couple of seasons when Wrexham finally get in the league and Notts County get back in the league and those well-backed teams like Chesterfield. So the strength is also there, League Two levels. You're expecting some of those giants to come through at some stage, you know, the Mansfields, the Bradfords of the world, even Salford in terms of their backing. But you've probably got a couple of experienced managers who've got the know-how of the league towards the top, Richie Wellens and Steve Evans. You won't have to look too far away from those two to see who's going to be in the shake-up at the end of the season, simply because they know the league. They know what players they need to get out of the league. They've done it previously. They'll do it again in the future. And they'll probably have the most sturdy squads going into what's going to be a hell of a slog throughout the season. It always is in League Two. And someone will come out of the pack. Like I say, you've got to expect Bradford to do that at some stage and possibly Mansfield. But look no further than those two at the top at the moment.
Matt, I mean, I know you've had a challenging week, but it's been such an uplifting chat. Good luck. Enjoyed your start. And we'll look forward to talking to you soon on the official EFL podcast.
Brilliant. Cheers, Glenn.
That is it for this episode. A big thank you to Matt Taylor and Tim Krul. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating. Press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name is Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
the official EFL podcast.